Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. Really quick before we get to the guest, I'm going to be doing a little holiday mailbag segment for Bulwark Plus members. It's a good time of year to give somebody in your life a Bulwark Plus subscription. You can go to thebulwark.com and get signed up for that. You get access to the Secret Podcast. You get access to JVL's Triad, the best newsletter in the business. And, now I'm going to be asking your more fun questions. We asked about this about a week ago for you to submit some questions. I'm going to tell you, I got some boring questions, and I got a lot of rants disguised as questions. It's a holiday mailbag. Send us some fun stuff, too. You know, send me some fun questions about your life, and I'll do serious stuff, too. The email is bulwarkpodcast@thebulwark.com. We're going to start doing it at the end of the show from time to time. So I'd appreciate it if you could, titillate me. Make me laugh. Send me some fun questions. All right. Today's guest. He served for 38 years in the U.S. Army and retired after being commanding general of the U.S. Army Europe. We're welcoming him back to the show, but it's the first time I'm welcoming him as an official member of the team. It's Bulwark military analyst Mark Hertling. What's going on, sir?
Hey, Tim. How are you doing today? It is great to be a part of your team and the Bulwark team and all the great people there that I've come to know over the last month. Super group of people.
Well, we appreciate your expertise. I also appreciate your running circles around some of the other folks on your output. Okay. I'm looking side eye some of my other colleagues saying you got to keep up to the Hertling standard now, which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's it.
Out this morning, Politico got an interview with President Trump in exchange for providing him with a new fake trophy. They named him the most influential man in Europe. I want to read you one of the highlights from that interview. Again, this was about the Most Influential Man in Europe Award. Trump said this about our allies in Europe. Most European nations, they're decaying. They should be freaked out by what they're doing to their countries. They're destroying their countries and their people. The questioner asked, does that mean they won't be our allies anymore? Trump replies, well, it depends. You know, it depends. Then the reporter asks again, do you think that many of them are just weak or do you not really want to be allies with them? And he replies, I think they're weak, but I also think they want to be so politically correct. I think they don't know what to do. Europe doesn't know what to do. Not exactly a kind of a bold statement there in support of our European allies that have, you know, worked with us on so many the military engagements that you were working on. I'm wondering what your reaction is to that, given your experience and what you think the implications might be.
Well, you know, I know we're going to talk about the national security strategy later on, but, you know, that's been my focus the last couple of days, trying to parse that thing. And what he's saying in the press now is not a whole lot different than what the document says about Europe. It's, in my view, it was very insulting. The Europeans see it the same way. I've been related to many of the countries in Europe from old colleagues in the military and also in their governments and have been talking to them over the last few years. They were suspect during the first Trump administration. I think during the Biden administration, there was a pretty strong effort to try and rebuild that alliance and help them understand that we're a part of it. But in the national security strategy, and in these words from this morning, it really appears like Trump has been very condescending across the board. He sees Europe as he sees the rest of the world as pawns of the United States. What do we have to do to get them to support us more? And he forgets that I think that there's 49 countries in Europe, 50 if you count Russia, and they each one have their own national security priorities and economic priorities and military priorities and diplomatic priorities. And yet he really seems to be wanting to funnel them into a transactional relationship where they're doing nothing but supporting him and his goals. That's not the way the world order works. So that's what concerns me the most about the strategy and some of the insults he's been leveraging against various countries.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and dig right into that national security strategy first, and then we'll kind of go around the world. And Trump had some comments in that Politico interview that I'll circle back to from our various entanglements. What is the national security strategy? Who cares? You know, about a document on paper? Is it just, you know, the government puts out a lot of BS, right? Like, why does this matter?
Well, two things. It's interesting you said that because Elliot Cohen, who's at Johns Hopkins, one of their emeriti professors who I know very well.
Co-host of the Shield of the Republic podcast.
There you go. Great guy. And he is exceedingly smart. He taught our son to get a master's degree from there. And what's interesting is he kind of made a flip comment that no one reads the national security strategy. And what he meant was no one outside the strategic influencers and the governments and all that. But it is a strategy, first of all, that provides nesting for other strategies like the National Defense Strategy, like the Joint Planning Strategy, like the State Department Engagement Strategy. So it is a top-down base document, a capstone document that other people will take and then say, okay, how do we write our own strategy? And I'll give you an example, and I talk about this in the Bulwark article I wrote, that when I was the J7 on the joint staff, the guy in charge of war plans and transformation, when Bush's national security strategy came out after 9/11, we were pressured into writing a new national defense strategy, telling various combatant commanders around the world, here's what we got to do now. So it was taking that base document and saying, okay, what does this mean for the military? What does it mean for military acquisitions, for planning, for contingencies, for training? What are we preparing to do? Then when it gets down to the combatant commanders, the four-star generals all and admirals all over the world, they have to make their theater strategy based on the national strategy. So later on, when I was in European command as the commander of the U.S. Army, I watched Admiral Stravides put together the European command continental or regional security plan. And it told me what I had to do as the three-star army commander: conduct theater security cooperation with a focus on certain countries, be prepared to deploy, relook your contingency plans. So there's a bevy of actions that come out of the strategy. And that was one of my main comments about Trump's strategy, because he said strategy is a relationship between the ends and the means. And he forgot the middle thing, which a strategy also has to do, and that's the ways. How do you execute the things you're being told to do? And what kind of actions does it take to incorporate what you're trying to do for an end state?
Mark Warner was on with Bill Kristol on Sunday and was talking about just how striking it was to him how little attention was given to China, for example, in the strategy versus how much attention was given to like micromanaging how Europe should manage, you know, oversight of posting on social media platforms, right? And like, there was a lot of written about the culture war stuff in Europe and how Europe is getting out of step where MAGA wants to be, and relatively little, you know, for, you know, the things that are actual potential national security threats to us. Either you know, kind of riff on that, or were there other kind of elements of the strategy that really struck you?
Well, what I thought was the most interesting is he started the chapter on what we want or how we're going to get some things was the title of the chapter, and I'm pulling it up right now. He started off with a description of what was going on in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah.
And the Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine. And what he said in that section was, and I'll quote it, after years of neglect, the United States will reassert and enforce the Monroe Doctrine to restore Americans' preeminence in the Western Hemisphere. That was a shocker to me. There currently isn't a whole lot of threats. So he's looking at a strategy that refocuses on one area versus other areas in the world. Then he flowed from that to China. And as you said, he was pretty emphatic about certain things within China. Then when he got to Europe and the Middle East, for Europe, it was just kind of a hand wave of how bad they were and how they've declined and how the society in 20 years was going to be non-European. So there was some racist overtones in there. And it just, again, was a proclamation of American first, America first. And what I found the most depressing of the whole thing, Tim, was the fact that there was, I think, one sentence in the entire document about building allies and using the strength of alliances. Everything is about what America will do and what America wants. And whereas that may create some strategic end states, you know, what I've found in this world and after four decades in the military, if we're doing it alone, it's going to get real ugly fast. And he hasn't really looked at the concept of working with others. Now, I know Steve Bannon and Steve Miller probably say, well, that's globalization and you're a woke general and you don't know what you're talking about. But we can't do anything alone today because of supply chains, global interference, and emerging threats. That's the other thing I'd talk about, too, which is not mentioned at all in this. It's just currently the strategy really focuses on the state of the world as it is today and what he wants it to be.
Yeah, I do have got to correct you on one thing. I think we do have a couple of allies that they're focused on. El Salvador, Qatar.
He brings a lot of connections with people in the Middle East because of transactional abilities. So are those allies or are they just means of getting some kind of transaction and making America greater?
To your point on the allies, this was Antonio Costa, head of the European Council, in response to the strategy, said allies do not threaten to interfere in the democratic life or the domestic political choices of their allies. They respect them. And you can just sense the tensions growing. And look, there's always been various tensions, and world leaders aren't always going to agree. In the Bush era, there were tensions with France, and you could go back. Overall, obviously, Obama had tensions with Israel, and so you could go through the list. But this seems like an across the board of Trump trashing of the allies, particularly in Europe. And given your time there, you know, our colleague Jonathan Last also wrote this week about how NATO, you know, it's kind of leading to a crumbling of NATO. Just peeking behind the curtain here for people in our staff meeting on Monday, you indicated you might not be all the way on JVL's view on that. So we can explore that a little bit. But I'm just wondering what you think the implications are in particular with that, like the allied relationships with Europe, threats to NATO, and how they're reacting to this strategy.
Yeah, the folks I'm talking to in Europe, both the military and a few government officials from various countries, especially the Baltics and the Nordic countries, who are sort of the new NATO.
Yeah.
They, you know, with Sweden and Finland joining recently, they have taken an onus of kind of building a block. They call it the Baltic Nordic Eight in their northern region, which didn't exist before because they realize the threats they face. But what I'd say is when you talk to them, they will tell you they are angry when you finally get into a three-beer conversation. You know, the first part of it is politeness and respect and all that because of past relationships. But by the time the third beer is down, they're talking about how pissed they are at America and how they don't think we're going to recover from this very well. I tend to disagree with that. I think the alliances will come back together because of emerging threats and our realization that we need them more than they need us. And it will come back to that. And that was the commentary I made about JVL's comments, that I think we're going to attempt to rebuild our relationship once this administration is done, because we're going to realize we need it more than they need us.
All right. I have not bought a single Christmas present, not one. December 9th. Concerned about that. If you're a last-minute shopper like me, you know the feeling. Ideas are running low. Shelves are empty. Well, Aura Frames is a solution with a gift that feels personal and, you know, will be sitting on their desk all year long. Aura Frames is a good gift for, you know, a family member. I think the traditional thing to think about with Aura Frames is you want to give it to the great aunt or the grandmother or the great-grandfather or the uncle, somebody that lives in a different city. You know, so they can see the pictures of the grandbabies all year long. It's It's a great reason. That was what I did when we first had Aura Frames as a sponsor last year, 2 years ago. Who the hell knows? Time is a flat circle. And they loved it. The grandmothers love it. I can tell you that. But it also, I think it can be a fun gift for friends, for colleagues. You can give the Aura Frame to a work friend and send them pictures of, you know, work trust falls past, or to one of your high school or college friends with like an old cache of pictures from when you guys were younger and getting into trouble. Anyway, long story short, Aura Frames works for everybody. You can upload unlimited photos and videos. You just download the Aura app and connect to Wi-Fi. You can preload all the photos before it ships. They get it out of the box and they've already got it. They can, you know, cry or laugh, depending on what kind of photos you sent them. You can personalize the gift. You can share additional photos and videos effortlessly from your phone all year long. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling carver mat frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code Bulwark at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code Bulwark. This deal is exclusive to listeners and frames sell out fast. So order yours now and get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Obviously, we want to spend some time in Venezuela, but let's talk about what the latest is with Ukraine and kind of the more acute impact of that fraying kind of alliance between us and Europe. Ukraine has gone through a period that's, I think, a little bit shaky. You were on this very early. I remember you wrote days after Russia invaded, talked about how people would be surprised by how strong Ukraine's preparation will be and how weak the Russian military will be. And that is really borne out, you know, in the ensuing years. But Ukraine lately is dealing with some corruption issues related to Zelensky's chief of staff and some battlefield issues, you know, Russia having some successful attacks on infrastructure. How do you kind of see the state of play there and like what's needed?
Yeah, it's interesting. The first thing you brought up was the corruption issues, because that's always been an issue in Ukraine. The very first time I went to Ukraine in 2008, I think it was, I took the Secretary of the Army with me because he wanted to see how our alliance partners were working together. So when we were flying up there, he said, "So tell me about Ukraine." And I said, "Well, it's a very corrupt country." And he goes, "Well, wait a minute, Hertling." He says, "You're taking me to a corrupt country. Why are we doing that to show interoperability?" And I said, "Because they have potential. Their corruption is based on what's left over from the Soviet regime, and they're trying to get through that. But it is a culture that's going to be difficult to overcome." My counterpart in Ukraine, a guy named Colonel General Vorobyov, one of the first things he asked me to do with him as a partner was help him get rid of the old Soviet generals that were in his army. Which was fascinating. He told me, he said, "The government's corrupt." It has, and this was in 2010. He said, "The government's corrupt. They're working on it." He said, "But I want to make the army better, faster." And he did. You know, if there's every once in a while a guy popping up in the Ukrainian cabinet or society that's corrupt and taking money, the only response I would have is, "Well, how many corrupt Americans have we seen in the last week doing exactly the same thing, you know, in terms of getting pardons or stealing money or stealing cash or, you know, whatever, name that tune? Every government's got corruption if it allows it." So I'm not excusing it, but it happens.
I take your point that like there's going to be corruption in these sort of situations. It's not to excuse it. It's just kind of the reality. I do wonder if these two things are related, though, where Zelensky starts to get underwater politically because of concerns about like corruption around him, while they are a little bit more vulnerable, you know, on the military side than they have been. You know, if he's feeling more politically vulnerable, that might make Zelensky act differently, you know, vis-a-vis these negotiations, the pro-Russia negotiations, than he may have months ago. What do you make of that?
Yeah. And what you see, though, is, you know, I think Zelensky was willing to adapt. He wanted to see what Trump was going to do for him or with him. It didn't happen. It's been swayed both ways by this crazy negotiating team that has no understanding of either the culture of Russia or the culture of Ukraine. And that's gone back and forth. So now I think he's turning more toward the major European partners and saying, "How can you help me out?" And he's seeing that they are going to give him help because they are also breaking from the United States based on some of these insults and what they're seeing based on the corruption of the negotiating team. I mean, sweet Jesus, you've got Witkoff and Kushner and others who are working land deals as opposed to true peace treaties. And then you've got Kellogg, who should know better, saying some crazy things about what Ukraine is looking for. And, you know, it's interesting, Tim, because you mentioned my comments early on in the war. I was in my hotel room and across the street from CNN when the war started, because they asked me to come there. And I listed five different strategic objectives of Putin. And four of them had to do with Ukraine and breaking their will, you know, taking their capital, destroying their army, taking the Black Sea ports. The fifth one was further dividing the United States and further dividing NATO. The only ones he's succeeded on is that last one. Ukraine continues to stay strong, whereas we're the one that's kind of faltering a little bit.
How did your successors who spent so much time in Europe and worked with the Ukrainian military and understand the enemy and the threat from Putin, how do these guys stomach listening to, you know, an outer borough real estate man talk about how wonderful Putin is? The breakdown between like having Witkoff and Kushner, you know, trying to rig this has got to be just unbelievably galling to the people doing the actual work.
It is. And if I were to open up my behind the scene DMs and text messages with former colleagues, you would see some of that. It is, you know, it is mind boggling what those of us who understand the continent see in terms of individuals who are really neophytes at dealing with some of the Europeans. I mean, even Secretary Rubio, the first press conference I saw him in, you know, I just thought to myself, he's making every single mistake that any congressional delegation makes when they come to a foreign country. They're being condescending and, you know, just doing things that are not an understanding of how masterful, Putin and Lavrov are. And they've been in command of that country for 20 some years. And here you've got these new guys coming in thinking they can bowl them over with a land deal. It's just ridiculous. And I think Zelensky sees that. But he didn't want to insult anybody because he realized a lot of the United States support was helping him. And that's the essence of what's going on there.
Yeah, you'll be shocked that in the Politico interview, Trump, again, is kind of dumping the blame on Zelensky, saying that like he feels like we've got a good deal on the table and he wishes Zelensky would consider it more closely. So it's just time and again throughout this whole process, you know, he vacillates back and forth between, you know, being fully in a Russian, you know, propaganda mode. And then like some people bring him back on side and he gets annoyed that Putin isn't doing what he's asking for. But like the pressure is never put on Putin.
No, you know, never.
He's intimidated by Putin. So the pressure is always put on Zelensky. It's a schoolyard bully thing.
Yeah. I said something to someone the other day who was saying, why are we supporting Ukraine? And, you know, I used the World War II analogy. Okay, then why didn't we support Hitler? Even though we were told that he was taking the Sudetenland and he was killing Jews in the Holocaust, and you know he was going to kind of go into hiding for a couple of years while he rebuilt his army and then reattacked into Belgium, would you be okay with that? Because that's exactly the mode of operation of President Putin. That's what he does. He's a criminal, a crook, and a dictator, and he just wants more land and more property.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
So I talked about the Witkoff and kind of how military generals and experts must feel about like dealing with his clownishness. That is also true for the sitting Secretary of Defense as a former weekend talk show co-host. There's some buzz out there in the right-wing media, which, you know, you have reason to believe that they would have insight into this stuff since it's, you know, all their people that are on the inside, that there is an internal battle happening at DOD. And I think Laura Loomer called it a coming coup attempt with Daniel Driscoll, the Army Secretary, trying to displace Hegseth. I'm wondering what your sense is of, you know, Hegseth's standing at this point with the military folks. It's kind of noteworthy that, you know, I mean, obviously Trump still had his support and he's still been very visible, but like he hasn't been included, you know, he's been left out notably of some of the military meetings recently.
I was surprised when Secretary Driscoll of the Army went to Ukraine and Geneva. That's very unusual. And where was Hegseth during this period? I guess there was something else going on at the Pentagon or maybe a push-up, pull-up contest or something. I don't know, something more important. But it just seems strange.
Why is it unusual? Just for people who don't understand, why would it be unusual for the Secretary of the Army to go?
Well, the Secretary of the Army is responsible for manning, equipping, and training the Army. Yeah. You know, he's not all that involved in diplomatic affairs or defense with allied nations. I mean, the secretaries go out and see things and all sure. that, but they normally focus on what the Army is doing in Europe as an example. But he was at the table for the diplomacy action, and that just really is kind of unusual. I mean, even Secretary Driscoll does not have a whole lot of experience in Europe, does not have a whole lot of experience with war fighting. I think he only spent 3 or 4 years in the Army. So it's those kind of things that give you pause. Having said that, Secretary Hegseth doesn't have a whole lot of experience with Europe either or how to do diplomacy. So maybe it was better that they kept him at home. I mean, you look back at the previous administration when Secretary Austin would go places, he had the immediate gravitas of being a former four-star general, knowing the area of operation, knowing what the military does, and he represented the Defense Department well. I don't think we see the same thing in Hegseth other than lethality versus legality.
It's interesting. Like, it was not so long ago that the Secretary of Defense wasn't supposed to be a uniformed military officer. And like now we go through this phase where you had Mattis kind of in the first Trump term and people are kind of like, okay, we're going to let this go because we want to have an adult in the room around Trump. And then Biden continues that with Austin. And now I guess some discussion of Driscoll. Do you have any thoughts on just sort of that change and how things are now and whether there's any risks that there?
Yeah, I think there is risk in that because it sort of blends the civil-military relationship. And here I am talking and dissing a little bit on the political masters who are conducting these engagements. And I shouldn't be doing that. I'm trying to be respectful, just making an assessment. But when you put someone in that position, they need to be separated from the demands of the military, but at the same time, understanding what the military does. That organization of the Defense Department is huge. It's the second largest cabinet in government with close to 3 million employees, if you want to call them that, and worldwide obligations. So you got to have somebody that's pretty savvy. And I think Mattis was a good choice, even though a lot of people pushed back on that. And Trump understood soon why it wasn't a good choice for him because Mattis was kind of given the example. I think Austin was a good choice to repair relationships. And that's what Biden chose him to do more than anything else and get the military out from under what had happened in the first Trump administration. We're going to need the same thing again after this administration with another Secretary of Defense. Not saying that it requires a military guy, but it better be somebody who really understands the organization and is smart enough to realize that it's got to be run as a business too.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m.
Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's, we help you save.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
All right, let's go down to our war, non-war in Venezuela. I don't know what we're calling this. We're just bombing boats with no official declaration of war. You know, the big news of the past couple of days has been, you know, the briefing of six members of Congress over this strike. You're saying we shouldn't call it a double tap. We're calling it a restrike. What are you saying we should call this?
Restrike, re-engagement. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a secondary restrike in the Caribbean. And the big takeaway from this is that, like, all of the Democratic members who saw this basically said that it was totally inappropriate and shocking to watch the video. Some of the Republicans who saw it are not commenting. Tom Cotton is the one who is commenting, and he's spinning a story where these two guys were apparently in the water and were about to turn over the boat that had been bombed, get back in it, go meet up with some friends of theirs, and then bring deadly drugs to America to kill millions of Americans. I'm wondering what you think about Tom Cotton's assessment and what we've heard so far from the Hill.
Well, it just surprised me that it was so one-sided and so lacking in common sense. If you're with 11 of your buddies and you've just been blown up and nine of those 11 are killed and your boat's capsized and your drugs are floating away, you're not going to be thinking about continuing the mission. You know, having been blown up myself, that's the last thing on your mind. You just want to, you know, kind of get the unrung bell and continue the operation and get to safety.
But we got to pause here for a second. Tell us about when you were blown up. You can't just let that slide.
I was involved in an IED blast in 2003. So we were in a Humvee. And when I say blown up, I was not physically blown away.
Yeah, I know.
But,
yeah,
you know, it spilled my coffee. Let's put it that way. And everybody that was in the truck was the same way. But when you experience that kind of explosion right next to your vehicle, and in our case, none of us were harmed. It just blew out the windshield, blew off the, you know, some of the side panel and stuff, yeah, it still rocks your boat, no pun intended. So when you see nine of your 11 friends killed, your boat's upside down, and by the way, this is the first time it happened. So these guys are like, what the fuck just happened to me, you know?
That's a great point. This is not like one of the ones where now some of them have got to be expecting it or concerned about it, you know, because
right,
the news gets out.
Yeah, if I'm going out in a boat, I might get blown up. This one was like, what in the hell just happened? So that's an issue. But I don't understand why Senator Cotton would do something like that, because he's a military veteran. He should know better. It's just dumb. Or there's an agenda in there somewhere, which I think is probably the case.
I talked about this a little bit with Bill yesterday, but now that we have a military expert, we should at least, somebody with experience, like let's just even take them at the story that they're telling, just to try to even understand what would possibly be inside the minds of Hegseth and you know, the admiral that's in there, Bradley. So they bomb this boat. There are two guys in the water. Allegedly, they're saying that there's another boat that they're going to meet up with and that they're worried about these guys. Even taking them at face value that that is what happened, wouldn't the right thing to do then be, okay, well, let's interdict them. Who is on the other boat? You know, what kind of information can we gather? Like, wouldn't there be a rationale for interdicting them, interviewing them, grabbing them out of the sea, you know, rather than doing what we did?
There would be very good rationale because, number one, you're not committing a crime. Number two, you're gaining intelligence. Number three, you can pick up any drugs that are still remaining and put them in your Coast Guard cutter. And that's the thing, Tim. It's not like we don't have any experience with this. We've been doing Coast Guard interdiction of boats on the high seas probably for 20 or 30 years. And in fact, it was interesting because when I was a one-star general, I went on a trip to Key West, and we literally watched a Coast Guard vessel launch an aircraft because they had on their radar or sonar, whatever, they had a boat that was coming in, a cigarette boat, and a Coast Guard cutter can't keep up with one of these go-fast boats. So they launched a helicopter with a sniper hanging off the side, shot out the engine, got out, captured the boat, captured the people who were transporting the drug, took all the drugs, and it was an interdiction effort, and they likely got a whole lot of intelligence about where the drugs came from, who the cartels were, who these members were, and in that case, frankly, all of them were just mules looking to get paid. They weren't drug runners. They were just people trying to get a salary. And that's what happens a lot in combat. That's what we do. So I truthfully don't understand why we brought special operators into this to launch drone aircraft and destroy boats and kill people other than performative politics. It doesn't make any sense.
It's also telling you say the performative politics, and another piece of evidence that they're doing this for performative politics is that they're releasing all these videos, which is not standard operations that we've seen in the past in situations like this. I mean, from time to time, but you know, just to like release the video of every strike on these boats, but they are not releasing the video of that restrike, of the subsequent strike, and even though Trump had promised. And I think that tells you a lot.
It does. And what I'll tell you, too, to carry this on with Secretary Hegseth the other day saying, oh, we're going to sanitize it and we're going to clean it up to make sure it's, you know, there's no sources or methods or tactics, techniques and procedures is what he said. What I'll tell you, again, I go back. This attack happened on the 2nd of September. Knowing how military people do things, there's a log. There's, you know, the film is already sanitized. There's nothing to look at other than the strike. And you're seeing something that based on audio, video, and written documents or typed documents that says, here's exactly what happened on a TikTok, the date to date to date to date.
Yeah.
So I don't know why it's taking so long. This thing happened 3 months ago. It's either releasable or it's not. And it's just an excuse to not release it. That's my view of it. I mean, every operation I ever conducted, a strike against a facility or a group of people when I was a division commander in Iraq, we had the film, we had the log, we had the input to a computer and what we were doing. We had the rationale for why we were doing it. And right next to us, there was a lawyer saying, yeah, we're okay. It ain't that tough, is what I said before.
Yeah.
Here's what I think, too, if I can continue on, because today is the most interesting part of this, because you not only have continual debate about what Admiral Bradley said, today, Admiral Halsey, who is the Southern Command commander, whose area of operation this was occurring in, who had a fight with Secretary Hegseth and by all reports, and his lawyers had a discussion that was contentious with the Department of Defense lawyers about what was going on. And suddenly he was asked to retire in the middle of October. That testimony is going on in Congress today, too, with a much smaller group.
Yeah. Talk to me about the dynamics there with Halsey, because that's pretty strange. Like, he was in that position running Southcom for about a year, and he's pushed out. You mentioned he's Black. I think it's relevant in the context of Hegseth's anti-DEI campaign, where you really do see a trend of the types of people that have been pushed out of DOD. How do people inside the military, you think, process that? Or like, how strange is that? Maybe it's less strange than it seems. Like, a new administration comes in, they want their own people. You know, explain what you think happened there with Halsey.
Well, knowing a little bit of background of him, he had a pretty fascinating career. He's done a lot of good things. But before he was the commander of Southcom, he was the deputy commander of Southcom as a three-star admiral, a vice admiral. Then he was promoted, took Southcom as a command about 10 months ago. I think he took command last October. So it's been less than a year. Whenever you have someone who retires with less than a year in a new position, what you've got to understand is when admirals seemingly to the American people are promoted and given a new rank, they are actually assigned to a job that has that rank attached to it. So when he went from three-star to four-star, deputy commander to commander, he was then promoted for the position he was in. When you retire with less than a year in duty, you're not going to retire as a four-star. Now, he may get an exception and, you know, he'll retire as a four-star general, but it's just interesting that he was asked, linked to disagreements with the operations in Southern Command. What you also have to understand is a combatant commander or any commander is responsible for their entire area of operation. When special operators come in, like Admiral Bradley as the JSOC, the Joint Special Operations Command commander, come into that area, or when the CIA comes into that area, they still are connected to the combatant commander, Halsey.
When you say connected, do they report to them?
They coordinate with them.
Who's the boss?
Coordinate with them. So what I think you're going to see is a two-pronged chain of command between SecDef, between the special operators, and SecDef to the Southern Command commander. And that's going to be confusing in and of itself. And when what I believe is going to show up in testimony is Admiral Halsey is going to say, hey, look, this is my area of operation. I didn't agree with the approach. I was telling them I didn't agree with the approach. I thought there was some activity that they shouldn't be doing. And because I voiced my concern about either legalities or approaches, I was asked to retire.
So how unusual is that? I mean, like, that's what I'm trying to understand. Go back to your experience in Iraq or whatever. There had to have been high-ranking military officials that didn't agree with a strategy or an approach that Rumsfeld had put forth or would express it. Like, how does it usually work in that sort of situation?
Well, you provide your advice, your best military advice. You fight, if you will, for your point of view. But then when the civilian decision maker says, no, here's what we're going to do, you salute and say, okay, I'll execute it to the best of my ability, unless it's unlawful or illegal.
I guess I've been wondering, watching through all this, you know, there's this big hullabaloo about that video that Mark Kelly and Jason Crow and others put out, Slotkin, Democrats in Congress, talking about how you'd fear in the military, you do not have to follow an illegal order. That video came out like a couple days before all of this reporting. And I don't have any inside information on this, but I do wonder if there was scuttlebutt about this. And like, you know, it's hard for me to determine like where the line is, right? Like there's some obvious examples, you know, it's like you're a soldier and they're like, shoot a U.S. citizen in the street. Like, that's an illegal order. You shouldn't do that. Where does this Venezuela war, not war, fit in that? You know, and like what are the gray areas? Because like, it's not even we don't even have a declared war. We're just bombing boats, right? So it seems like the whole operation is illegal. But so I wonder what you think about all that.
I don't know certainly what was in the mind of the six legislators that made the video. You could debate whether or not it was appropriate. My contention is it was made mostly for individual units who were being asked to go on the streets of the United States cities. I think that's who it was geared toward.
Yeah.
But it was also made toward the potential of this war, not war, in Venezuela. I don't know. I mean, Mark Kelly and I are friends. We've texted each other a couple of times. Yeah. He's never told me what drove them to make this video. But it's interesting to me that all of this seems to collide at the same time. But it was just a reminder. Some in the military will say, well, that's unnecessary. Everybody is taught not to obey unlawful or illegal orders. But it sure came at a time when it seemed a lot of those kind of orders might have been teetering on the edge for commanders who were being asked to do things that maybe they shouldn't be asked to do.
The clock's running out on December deal drops at Lowe's, but there's still time to wrap up something they'll love. Shop great gifts under $50, like the DeWalt Elite Series 100-piece bit set. Plus, if you order by 2 p.m., you get same-day delivery by 8 p.m. Shop December deal drops while you can. Lowe's. We help, you save.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time, and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Think about where they go from here. There's a CNN report yesterday that the administration's quietly building plans for if Maduro is ousted. This isn't really surprising. I'm sure the military is building plans for lots of stuff. Trump, in that political interview today, said that he doesn't want to rule in or out expanding the war on the land in Venezuela. He said, I don't want to talk to you about military strategy. And then he did also say they're open to expanding the use of force in their fight against quote-unquote narco-terrorists to include Colombia and Mexico. I mean, at some level, Admiral Olsey's maybe lucky that he's out of there. I hope he gets his fourth star. But like the Southern Command situation is pretty uncertain at this point. I mean, what do you kind of make about all of that and all the scuttlebutt about what might be next?
Well, first, regarding Admiral Halsey, he is retiring, I think, at the end of this month. He is still the commander, but when he leaves, I don't know of anybody who's named to replace him right now. So the question is going to be, are you going to have an acting commander? And that's always challenging.
So he's overseeing these strikes then, or they've gone around him, basically, or we don't really know?
I think they've basically gone around him. That's my contention. You know, the CNN reporting, you know, they've got a Pentagon reporter that's getting scuttlebutt. Hey, contingency plans are made to do X, Y, and Z. The fact of the matter is the military is always asked to do potential plans, and they normally give a couple of courses of action. They can't say, no, we're not going to give you any plans to invade Venezuela. They have to provide, here are some options if you want to invade. And then when they give those plans, they said, and here are the downsides or the upsides to doing each one. Okay. That happens all the time. So anytime you hear from the media that, oh, the Pentagon's planning to invade Venezuela. No, they're really not. They're being told to commit plans for the president or some civilian authority. It would be, in my view, a huge mistake to go into Venezuela. It's a huge country. It's bigger than Ukraine. It's got a population of 31 million people. It's got deserts and mountains and terrain. When you go into a place like that, especially if you're thinking regime change, much like we have in past couple of wars that I was involved in, there are some on the civilian side that say, oh, well, just replace the president and get the new guy in there. Well, what we've seen when you conduct regime change operations, it's a whole lot messier than people think it will. And we end up staying there decades with a lot of lost soldiers. At the same time, too, going back to our discussion on national security strategy, you know, if Colombia is now involved and Honduras and others are now thinking of being invaded, too, by the president, these are countries we've had a counter-narcotics campaign with for 30 years, and they've been pretty successful for the most part. So I don't know why we would be reinvading Colombia, because they've kind of overcome most of their drug problems. There's still drugs coming out of there, but it hasn't overwhelmed the government like it used to during the narco phase of their democracy, as it will.
This might be a dumb question, because probably the answer is it's different for different people. But it's hard for me to get into the minds of military folks who are stationed or involved in the Western kind of theater right now. Because like at some level, this is maybe going to sound glib, but like you want something to do. And like it's, you know what I mean? Like you didn't join the military to do nothing, I guess. Most people didn't. But then on the other hand, it's like all of a sudden out of nowhere, you have this ridiculous kind of mission where you're bombing these boats that are allegedly coming from America, but really seem to be maybe going to the Caribbean islands and then to Europe. What do you think it does, like something like this does to the psyche of people that are in the military?
I can only give you an example, Tim.
Great.
I was in the Pentagon on 9/11 and was actually, it's the only time I've been assigned to the Pentagon. I happened to get there a month before the attacks. We watched and supported the attack into Afghanistan to get rid of Al-Qaeda. But then when the drumbeat started about invading Iraq for a variety of reasons, the people on the joint staff were pretty split, not evenly so, against going into Iraq and opening a second front. And I was one of those, as the war chief war planner, saying we should not do this. It's dumb to open up a second front and we don't have good information. But we went. And during the next 11 years of that war, either myself or our two sons and our daughter-in-law were back and forth into Iraq in a war that we none of us thought was, you know, probably the best thing to do. But once you get in there, you do your very best to execute the mission of the civilian authority. That's why it's so important to not have people in elected positions that do crazy stuff with the military and they think it through. Which brings us back to Venezuela. I think part of the issue with Admiral Halsey, the Southern Command commander, is he had probably been in Southern Command for a total of about 5 or 6 years of his career. He knew what a successful drug policy should look like. He knew how to coordinate the actions of other governments. He knew what it would take to do a counter-narcotics campaign, and he probably expressed those views to Secretary of Defense. And yet we have a Secretary of Defense that just wants to come in with aircraft carriers and special operators and start bombing drug boats. So that's where the contention lies within the military, of trying to give your best military advice and see it overrun by people who may not know as about the area as well as you do.
Well, we'll be watching for Admiral Halsey's testimony closely and listening for it. So I'm sure we'll be grabbing you on YouTube over on the Bulwark Takes feed once we learn more for what he has to say. Lastly, you wrote a really beautiful piece about Sarah Beckstrom, who's the West Virginia National Guard member that was killed in Washington, D.C., just tragically. And folks said that should go to the Bulwark, and we'll put the link here to read the whole thing. But I just, if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit of kind of how you reacted to that based on your experience.
I've shown this before. Let me reach over my desk. I've got a box on my desk that says Make It Matter on the front of it. Inside of it, if I can open it and show it to you without dumping pictures, are Please. The cards with pictures of soldiers, the 253 soldiers that were under my command in Iraq on a couple of deployments, or when I was an assistant division commander under another commander, Marty Dempsey. I look at that box every day, take a couple of cards out, think about where they would be today. When you have people who raise their hand and say they're going to support and defend the Constitution, and they know that there's a possibility that they might sacrifice everything they have, to include their life, when they do that, even if you don't know the soldiers that were killed, like Special Beckstrom was, you have a connection to them. You understand what they've gone through. You understand that they may be performing this mission when they really didn't want to, but they were sent there. And that seems to be the case with her, although she was making the best of it. She had a family, but she was also a young soldier. She was only, I think, 20 or 21. She joined the Army when she was 18. And on this particular mission, one of the things I pointed out in the story was that she had taken the pre-Thanksgiving Day duty the night before Thanksgiving because one of her soldiers who was going to perform that duty had an opportunity to go home or be with loved ones or whatever. I don't know the details. So she took it for another soldier when she didn't have to on Thanksgiving weekend. You know, it just tells you what kind of people they are. These young folks who will give more than what they're being asked to give, and they always do it. So truthfully, I thought, you know, just offering some of my perspective after seeing so many of our soldiers killed in action, and that doesn't even mention the wounded, talking about what they sacrifice and how good they are and how America sometimes doesn't realize how much these young people should be given in terms of respect and loyalty. So that was the purpose of writing that article.
Well, we appreciate it very much. Appreciate having your perspective and expertise and experience here, as I think it's going to be extremely relevant going into 2026, no matter what happens in Venezuela and Central America, but also potentially the use of military in the streets here in the U.S. And so we'll be having you back again soon. And people should be going to thebulwark.com to check out your writing. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Have a great day, too.
All right. Everybody else will be back here tomorrow for another edition of the podcast. See you all then. Peace. My life's going under cover. The Bulwark Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.
This is Matt Rogers from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Los Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.